Hey, this is Warren Haynes of Government Mule, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hi, this is Carmine Apice, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hi, this is Chris Slade, drummer of AC/DC and many other people, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hello and welcome to episode 537 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to bring you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 537, we have two heavyweights in the world of drumming joining us. One, a return visitor, Mr. Carmine Apice, who has got a chart-topping collection of Cactus Songs, a band that he kind of grew up with. So we'll talk with Carmine in just a little while about that album, about other things going on in his career, about a show he's actually doing in the Pittsburgh area, so stay tuned if you're a fan of his work. But first, we're going to turn our attention to Mr. Chris Slade. Chris, as I say that name, I think everybody remembers his time with AC/DC, played on the Razor's Edge album, and as well as, I believe, at least one, maybe two of their live albums, was in consideration for doing the live shows that the band is doing now. He also played with The Firm, Jimmy Page, Paul Rodgers. You might remember those guys from the 80s, that amazing Radioactive and two albums, I believe, The Firm did. Man from Man's Earth Band. So yes, Chris played drums on Blinded by the Light. He played with Tom Jones. He's played with Asia, Uriah Heep, Michael Schenker's Temple of Rock. So he's had quite a storied career. He has his own band called the Chris Slade Timeline, and they've released a new double album called Timescape on Brave Words Records. That album consists of one CD of new music that primarily written by Chris. Man for Man actually is involved in that as well. And then the second half of that, a second CD, is reimagined versions of songs from Chris's career, as well as some other AC/DC songs. So there's a slightly lean towards the hard rock in the second CD when you look at his career. So we'll get into all the details of that. So let's play something from the Chris Slade Timeline from the album Timescape, and then we'll get into that interview with Chris.
Without even knowing, I'll fuel on the fire.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful to get a chance to talk to you. You have just released for the Chris Slade Timeline Timescape album, which collection of songs you've written, some songs you performed on and through your very illustrious career. Can we first kind of talk about like the new songs that you did on this, you know, the Sundance and things like that? Were these songs that you've kind of written over the years, or were these things you sat down specifically to write for this project?
For this project, actually. I'm holding the CD up now so your listeners can hear. But anyway, yes, I discovered about 2.5 years ago, I have written some things in the past, mainly lyrics, and a couple of songs, nothing of any note. And about 2.5 years ago, I got I just got melodies. I know it sounds strange, but they just popped into my head. Even little short clips of things, and then I took it from there. I expanded it and took it where I thought it would go, and it seemed to work, and I was very pleased with the outcomes. And this just happened spontaneously.
Chris, when you write, I mean, obviously you're world renowned as a drummer, but what is the instrument of choice when you write? Do you guitar, piano, just kind of vocalize it?
No, it's humming.
That's the best, most portable instrument you have there.
Yes, and it's very flexible. But I've always been able to sing in tune. I've just always said I can't. I don't have a voice.
Yeah, I get.
Tom Jones has a voice. Paul Rodgers has a voice. David Gilmour has a voice, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have a voice. I can sing in tune, though. I'd be good in a choir.
Yeah. That's better than most of us.
I don't play any chordal instrument whatsoever, or any other instrument apart from drums. You notice I call them instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So I took them. I took the ideas to Mike Clark, the Timeline, Chris Slade Timeline keyboard player, and he made musical sense out of them. He put some chords. Do you like that one? Do you like that one? Do you want major or minor? And I know the difference. Sort of
sure.
Thing. And I'd say, well, I want those two, not those two. And that's the way it was working. And, and they weren't just melody, just song melodies, if you like. They were like bass lines.
Mm-hmm.
They were string lines. They were guitar arpeggios. Like working on the idea, I would say I could do with a guitar arpeggio, would ding 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 ding, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And fortunately, Mike also plays guitar, like he does on stage. He's the second guitar on AC/DC, as well as being the keyboard player. I call him Professor Michael J. Clark, for obvious reasons. It just worked out really better than I could have expected.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think of that, you know, as you're talking through kind of humming these and then, you know, essentially having someone kind of arrange your humming or you know, and kind of bringing it down to an instrumental level, that it's neat to think of that because, you know, probably 50% of musicians kind of either start with maybe a vocal melody or some words and then try to write form chords around it, or they'll start with just a riff, you know, you obviously.
Yeah, well, all those things happen. All those things happen. You know, I'll get a riff, yank, 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 and I'll make that into something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it they just pop in, and I think, oh, that'd be good for drums, that'd be good for bass, you know? And so I record them on my little recorder, and then I take that to Mike and say, well, and then I sing it to him, and I say, do you want backup with the recording I made, you know? I've heard other writers say, you know, I don't know where it comes from. It just happens. Paul McCartney said that it just happened, you know?
Yeah, if you knew how to make it happen,
yeah. He walked around for weeks saying to people, I'll play you this. Have you ever heard it before? And for months, yesterday, were scrambled eggs. It was called scrambled eggs. And he would go, scrambled eggs, la-da-da-da-da-da, scrambled eggs. It's the truth. He said it himself in the interview. You know, that's how it works. And he thought he'd stolen the melody because he thought it was too good.
It's interesting to hear some, you know.
I know the feeling.
And I think everybody who writes any kind of music, you have to, it's so hard not to let your influences creep in almost to the level of plagiarizing, unfortunately. You know, so you almost need sometimes to do that with people. I've seen that over the years. You know, hey, is this too close to this, or is this, you know, have I heard this somewhere before?
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
absolutely right. You know, that it's do you come up with the lyrical ideas yourself? I mean, is that something, or do you let the
yes
do you kind of write
no,
in
the lyrics are mine.
Is it autobiographical stuff, or do you kind of write in a, more of a third person?
No, it hardly ever is autobiographical. It's usually just whatever sounds good and whatever rhymes with the line before.
Yeah.
There's one moment on Timescape album that is autobiographical, which is in Sundance, which is the opening track.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics are, my soul is made of fire, my soul can't burn. And I got that from a personal experience. I did a sweat lodge in Sedona, Arizona, with some American indigenous people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it was incredibly hot, like unbelievable. Even they thought it was hot. I was told that after. So I sort of put up with half of that, or half put up with it, if you like, and just went along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, I had a lucid dream. When I was asleep, I just went to sleep and had this dream, and it was incredibly real. And I realized that my soul is made of fire. And that's where that bridge comes from in that song. I had an epiphany that my soul was made of fire. Our souls are made of fire. All humanity, I mean, mm-hmm. when I say that. So that was autobiographical. Anything else is, Dajun, but all the lyrics anyway, I think, come from experiences.
Mm-hmm.
In any song, it sort of comes out of your soul, actually.
Right.
You know, if you can put it, I've got lots of poetry, which probably people will probably never see. And I've always done it. I've always put poems together or, you know. So I've always written lyrics, if you like.
Right.
And with Questions, which is on the first CD, which is on the originals, that came from when I was running Earth Band. I wrote the lyrics. I wrote a poem. They answer my questions with questions. And Manfred, for a couple of weeks, Manfred was searching for some sort of melody. I thought he'd write one, but he didn't. He came back 2 weeks later and said, "I've got a great melody for your poem." And it turned out it was Schubert's third impromptu. I put Schubert's third racket on the on the CD. But
a bit irreverent, but
yeah,
let it go.
You'll be hearing from Schubert's attorneys on that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. So shoo me.
That's a good one.
So, you know, and it fitted almost perfectly with the lyrics. I didn't have to change anything. Any phrasing, maybe one here or there, but just maybe once or twice at maximum. And it fitted perfectly. And so that turned questions, the song questions. And it was a minor hit in various places in Europe and Scandinavia. And I thought, well, okay, people of this generation haven't heard it.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it'll be a hit again. Who knows? And the sort of the same thing happened with Jawbringer, because that was melodies written by Gustav Holst on the Planet Suite. And Manfred adapted those. He adapted the melodies, and I wrote the lyrics. And we had to send it to the Gustav Holst vetting team, if you like, which included his daughter, I believe, Imogen. And we got permission from him. And it's the only time they've given permission for a pop song at that time. I don't know if they've done it since.
Right.
But it was the only time then, in the 70s, that they gave permission for a pop song, because that's what they called it, to go out, which I was incredibly pleased about.
Yeah, Chris, when
so those two things were from Earthband.
When you put together, you know, obviously CD2 is, you know, songs from your legacy of your career, and when you're, you know, approaching those as a band, you can kind of see whose voice fits best on the song. But when you do these original songs, you know, when you, a song like Sundance or Time Flies or Questions, whatever, how do you decide kind of who sings the song? I see Steve sing some, you do vocals on some, Paul does, you know, how does that, you just try to see who kind of fits the mood the best, or when you're writing it, do you have an idea of whose voice might be the best to present that material?
Yes, that's right. So on stage, Bun, who is Paul Bun Davis, he's been Bun since he was about 3 years old. His mother calls him Bun. You know, his uncles call him Bun. He used to walk around going bun 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 when he was 3. So he's
kind of stuck.
He still does it. And he has a drink, forget it, it's everything's bun.
Bun.
So yes, Bun does the AC/DC songs.
Right.
As you can hear on the second side, and Stevie G does the Earth Band, Uriah Heep, all that sort of stuff. Asia,
right. Yeah.
So he sings that sort of stuff, and Bun does the AC/DC. That's basically the way it works on stage. So Bun has a particular type of rock voice, but he uses his, shall I say, his normal voice on Sundance and Back With A Vengeance, and on the original side, and on the second side, he uses his AC/DC voice and the AC/DC songs, and I think he does it absolutely marvelously, to be honest.
Yeah, the Thunderstruck, Thunderstruck in particular, you know, really caught my attention. I was like, you know, you have a Brian Johnson sound in your head that you know, people have heard that intro riff to Thunderstruck a million times. So you're kind of like, okay, everything was very similar, and it's like, okay, it's all going to come down to the voice. You know, honestly, you know, we knew you could play the drums, and the guitar pieces are done very faithfully. but it was about the voice, and he really did a masterful job of creating Brian Johnson on those. So hats off.
Yes, thank you. I'll tell him that. Thanks very much. And you know, we've been together for 12 years, and we've been doing gigs all that time throughout Europe.
Mm-hmm.
We could never get to the States because it takes visas and it takes, and you need a promoter to ask you to go and all that stuff.
A lot of money. Yes.
So you need an invitation and a visa. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a cheap.
But you can't get into the States, not legally anyway, you know, and nobody should try to get in illegally because you can get banned from the States for life if they catch you. So yeah. I'm lucky I've got a green card. I can, you know, I've had a green card for 10 years at least, longer. And I've always had visas before that.
Right.
So that's the only way to do it. But the problem is they don't hand out visas easily. You know, I've heard horror stories about the visas turning up like 2 months after the tour is supposed to end.
Yeah.
You know? That's the worst case scenario. And you just can't do a tour like that. Nobody can.
Yeah, it's unfortunately the case for many bands, unless you're, you know, massive Live Nation backed touring act. Sometimes it's very difficult to make the dollars and cents of and all the paperwork and all that stuff. You know, it's a lot to put in for a band to do, let's say, a club show, you know, for example, or a small theater. It's a lot of work and a lot of money, and the logistics of it is just prohibitive.
Yeah,
you know, you're not alone in that.
It's a nightmare. Yeah.
As far as the songs you chose for the second album, obviously, quite a bit of AC/DC, which I think, you know, for at least from my generation, probably the band you're most synonymous with. Was the one thing I was curious about is no material from the Firm. Was that just, you know, you thought maybe the AC/DC stuff was a little more commercially viable, or do you guys do Firm material in your live shows?
Yes, we do the Firm. Yeah, we mix things up on we do half AC/DC and half the other stuff. Because that's just the way it is, and it keeps people entertained, and it switches our singers over, so it's not boring.
Right.
A different guy singing suddenly the next song, I sort of run it like that. And the record company wanted AC/DC songs.
Sure.
On.
Yeah.
So. I said, look, you're only going to hear people saying, you know, trolls saying what they're doing. They're not AC/DC, you know, all that sort of stuff, because it happens all the time. But we're not an AC/DC tribute band because nobody wears shorts and nobody plays an SG, you know?
Yeah, you need plenty of those in the States.
Oh, yeah, all over the world.
Yeah, I mean,
and flattery is the greatest form of what? Flattery is the greatest form of, you know,
compliment. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, they're a fantastic band.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I get given CDs from tribute bands, and I go, "Why are you giving me this?" Well, we're really good. I go, well, you are, yes, but I've been in the band, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't need the cover versions, Chris.
Yeah,
I saw
that's what I said to the record company, but they insisted.
Sure. I one last question. I saw in preparing to speak with you a photograph of you. Obviously, you played with Tom Jones, and it was a picture of you and Tom with Elvis Presley. Do you recall that that.
Yeah.
I've heard some very interesting stories, like Alice. I just saw recently a clip of Alice Cooper talking about meeting Elvis Presley. It was kind of a strange encounter. Was there anything particularly memorable about meeting him?
I met him a few times, two or three times, because he was, he and Tom became very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
Very good friends. And, you know, he wasn't taking drugs when we met him. I've never taken drugs in my life, and neither is Tom Jones. Plenty of booze, but not
sure.
Drugs. It wasn't in our culture when we were growing up. But Elvis was very quiet, very polite, just like you read that he is like. That's exactly what he was like. He wasn't drinking, as far as I could tell. He threw a party for Tom. So we were all invited, and it was him and the Memphis Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And that was in Las Vegas, that particular party. And we had 2 or 3 hours. And that photograph of me with the two of them was taken about 4 o'clock in the morning. And it's the only day in my life that I had a Beatle cut.
Yeah.
Don't ask me why, it just happened that way. I combed my hair forward, something I've never done before in my life. And, you know, that picture happened. So I'm very pleased it did.
Yeah,
and
I don't care how my hair looks if I'm getting a picture with Elvis. That's, you know, that's one
for me.
Chris, I want to thank you.
I call it...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Let me tell you, I call that picture, Who's That with Slade?
Yeah, I'm the mod version of Chris Slade with Elvis Presley and Tom Jones. That's a classic.
Right.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you. The new album is available now. It's called Chris Slade Timeline. Unfortunately, we might not get to see you in the States, but we can wish. But for now, people can pick up the record on Brave Words Records.
I hope we do, actually. I really hope we do. I've been going there since the 60s to the States. And, you know, I love traveling there. I love the whole thing about it.
Well, we'd love to see you back.
That's why I got a green card.
Keep our fingers crossed. Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
Green Day present the Saviors Tour. Live in Pittsburgh, PNC Park, September 1st. Performing both Dookie and American Idiot in their entirety, plus fan favorites and tracks from their new album, Saviors, with the Smashing Pumpkins, Rancid, and the Linda Lindas. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. Green Day, the Saviors Tour, fueled by Monster Energy.
All right, again, a very special thank you to Chris Slade. The new album, Timescape, from the Chris Slade Timeline, is available now. 2 CDs. One is all new material, including songs co-written by Manfred Mann. Chris is involved with the writing of all of the songs. And then there's a second disc of primarily hard rock, but some other projects that Chris was involved in. So you can get that album now. Turn our attention now to Carmine Appice. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the band Cactus really influenced a lot of bands that I think our generation kind of grew up being influenced by. So, you know, kind of influenced by proxy. Carmine has worked with a flood of musicians to release a new album. It's called Temple of Blues, Influences and Friends. Again, it's from Cactus. So this album features just total heavyweights, including Joe Bonamassa, Pat Travers, Warren Haynes, Vernon Reed, Steve Stevens, Ty Tabor of King's X, Billy Sheehan. I mean, the list literally just goes on indefinitely of people that have been on this album. So we wanted to get a chance to talk to Carmine about this. What, you know, why now? How did this come together? How did it come out so good? I mean, if you have a chance to listen to this, highly, highly recommend. So And then we are also talking to him about a live event if you're in the Pittsburgh area, if you're familiar with the Monongahela Aquatorium. Carmine is actually taking part in a Rod Stewart tribute show that will be at the Monongahela Aquatorium on the 24th of August. Tickets are still available. We'll have a link on our website to that as well. So if you head over to Iron City Rocks, you can get tickets for that. Tonight's the night tribute show. So without further ado, Mr. Carmine Appice. We'll be right back. Pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have Carmine and Peace on the line. How you doing, Carmine?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. A pleasure to get a chance to talk to you. You guys have just had a very high charting album on the blues charts with Cactus coming back ferociously with a new record. Can you talk
a
little bit?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I listened to the record, and you know, you get a certain sense for what you're going to hear in the blues charts. You know, you hear certain artists kind of monopolize that category. And I listened to yours, and I was like, this album is just nasty. It's so, you've got so much great stuff on this record, and just a laundry list of great musicians. Can you talk a little bit of, and this had to be a logistical nightmare to put this all together. How did this kind of come to be?
Well, it took a year. It took about a year, and the owner of the label, Brian Pereira, came up to me and said, I'd like to do an album, because we had a few other albums on Cat that we did on Cleopatra with Cactus. They did well.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, can we do an album that would be people who are influenced by Cactus, and then, like, you know, we should do the old songs. I said, oh, interesting. I said, yeah, I can do that. Because, you know, a few years ago I did the Catharsis record. I don't know if you heard that, but
mm-hmm.
it was a Carmine Appice Catharsis that has every major guitar player from the 80s on it. You know, and we did 37 tracks of that. And it's still being bought in box sets and
sure.
you know, a lot of stuff being done with it. So I said, yeah, I think I could do that, because I knew there was a lot of people that I did know that were influenced by Cactus. So I said, yeah. I said, well, we need to put together some sort of budget, because, you know, I got to offer these guys something. I can't say, hey, just do it for nothing.
Sure.
So we did, we put the budget together. And next thing I knew, it was like, okay, we picked the songs. I did, since I produced it, it was my band, I picked the songs. And then I, out of the songs, when I got a hold of somebody, you know, I would ask them what song they want to do. But before all that happened, I had to get them a track, mm-hmm. you know? So the way I did the tracks was very interesting. I started with the drums in my little studio there. And you usually don't do that.
Right.
Because you start with a click and a guitar player and a singer together, you know, but this one was pretty crazy. So I did a track with a click of like, say, Parchment Farm, and I started it the way I would play it live, and I just keep butt with it, you know. I heard it in my head, I just played it. But the problem I had is I wanted to fix something, you know, because, and, you know, now I have the ability to punch in a verse and punch out of a verse,
mm-hmm.
you know, and fix something like everybody else was. For many years, that wasn't available to the drummers. So now you can do that, just like at the top of a singer or whatever. You know, so I did the second song like that, One Way or Another. And then I said, you know what, main problem, I can't punch in. I have to, like, go through the whole song and measure out, well, this is the verse, and, you know, 1:30, and then from 1:30 to 2 minutes, etc., was the pre-chorus, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was very difficult to do that. So I said, I got to get a better way. So what I did was I actually hummed and sang the song with the riffs and everything to a click, and it actually gave me something to play to. Like, if I would do Evil, I'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, bam, bam, 3, 4, down, 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 drum fill, you know, verse, chorus, you know, solo. I went through the whole
right.
song like that. And then it actually gave me something to play to without hearing it in my head. I heard it more in my earphones. So if I needed to fix something, I went to the verse. I knew where the verse was, or I knew where the chorus was. So I did the rest of the songs like that. One of my interviewers said, man, you should release that as an album.
Yeah.
The scat version of Temple of Blues. I said, that would be really funny. Maybe I'll do that for a group.
You could call it like Scactus or something like that.
Yeah, that's what they said, scats. Temple of Blues, Temple of Blues Scat or something.
Before you said you did that, I was thinking you just did this sort of raw with silence, and I was thinking that would be so hard, you know, you think when you're playing a guitar.
That's what I did. I did that with the first two songs, and it was like, difficult, because not only was it difficult to play, because I couldn't play to anything, I played to what I was thinking. And then, like I said, if I wanted to fix something, I didn't know where anything was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I did it in my brain, not on the machine. So once I fixed that problem, it went down pretty easy. And then once I did that, I sent it to our singer. He played guitar and did a vocal and harmonica. Then sent it to a bass player. He did the same thing. And then now I have some demos, you know.
Right.
And then I called Ted Nugent. I say, so, you know, I want you to do this thing. You want to do it? Yeah, I'll do it. What song you want to play? He said, well, I like to play One Way or Another. So I knew I wanted Doug Pinnick to sing One Way or Another because he's a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got different singers on the record, too. So he said, okay, I'll sing it. I said, can you play it, too? Play bass. He said, yeah. So then I sent it to him. He played bass and sang it. So now all we needed was a guitar. So Nugent said, fine, let's do it. And he did the guitar. And this is basically how everything went. You know, and called up Dee Snider, said, yeah, I put the bass on it. Then I put, there was Doug Pinnick. Then I put Jim McCarty, original guitar player. He played it because he played it on the original record. And then I got Dee Snider to sing it. It was funny because McCarty said, oh, man, that guy's so quiet, Twisted Sister. I said, yeah. He goes, oh, man. You know, he was like, didn't know he could sing. You know, a lot of guys in the 80s couldn't sing.
Deacon, he heard it.
He could sing. He heard it. He goes, who's that? I said, that's the guy from Twisted Sister. He goes, oh, my God, he sounds great. I said, I know. I told you so. You know? And, you know, a lot of things went down like that. And, one of the interesting things was the beginning of Let Me Swim. We did it originally in 1970. We did it. We hit the chord. And we went chord, guitar thing. And we went bam, 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 another chord. Guitar thing, and we went into the song. So, you know, I knew that Van Halen was a big fan of Cactus. So, well, I never heard Eruption until, you know, years after it.
Sure.
When I heard it, I said, oh my God, this is Let Me Swim, the intro to Let Me Swim, done longer, extended. You know, and then I found, you know, I realized that, you know, Eddie was such a Cactus fan, he did that and named it Eruption. So I, on this version, I made it longer, the intro, so people can compare it to Eruption, you know. And I needed a great guitar player, so I got Doug Aldrich to play it. I knew he was great.
Yeah.
I used him in my guitars years. I've known him since 1992, and he played with a lot of killer people since then. When I put him on my guitars years, nobody knew him, so that kind of started the ball rolling as far as being on records worldwide that were known. And then he built his career up. So by the time we did this, I knew he was the right guy to do it. And the intro he did on it was amazing. You know? So.
Yeah, I think
that's how it happened.
The thing that really kind of comes off as a listening to this album, I made a point of not looking at the liner notes prior to listening to it. So, and the thing that was really interesting to me is how cohesive this record sounds, even though, you know, you've got, you know, if someone had said to me, you're going to listen to an album that has Dee Snider and Warren Haynes both singing on it, you're not expecting cohesiveness. You're expecting kind of like a, you know, movie soundtrack sort of, you know, but this this album really flows, you know, almost remarkably well, considering the number of people and the different styles and, you know,
they all came together to play Cactus style.
Yeah, that's exactly
and,
it.
And you know, when you listen to a record, you get the feel and the heartbeats from the drums.
Yeah.
And considering I played on all the originals, I have the feel for the original songs, and the drums, the drum sound is really great on this record. I did the drums in my studio with my engineer, co-producer Pat Regan, is amazing. You know, when it comes to mixing, you know, so he made the drums sound better than they sounded in my studio, and then they were constant through the whole record.
Yeah.
You know, and by having a constant and putting everything on top of it, it kind of gave it the same feel, you know,
sure,
all throughout.
How close to the original?
I think that's what did it.
How close to the original is from a drum perspective would you say these songs are? Yeah, I'm not a drummer to have that level of sophistication listening. Do you go back and listen to the originals, or you just kind of play it from memory?
No. I play it because we play gigs with Cassius, and I play it the way I would play it now. But those songs have a certain groove to them that the drums have to play in that area of the groove. You know, like Gilda's Glider, you know, it's like bump, bump, boom, ga, boom, ga, boom, ga, ba, boom, ga, you know. I didn't change that because I played it before, and it's driving, you know, and it's pounding, you know. One way or another, I always had that one, damn, bam, got accent, boom, boom, ba, boom, boom, gotch, the boom, boom, ba, boom, you know. Anything in that area, as long as you hit that accent,
yeah,
you know, it gives you that feel of following the guitar. What I liked about that song, Ted Nugent played a little different when the verses hit, you know, which at first when I heard it, I said, oh, he's not playing the riff. And I said, no, I like it. Then I asked my co-producer, what do you think? He goes, I like it too. I said, okay, let's keep it, you know. It's mostly everyone played similar to the original record because they were growing up. I mean, Warren Haynes, you know, he's a blues guy. That's a straight-ahead blues.
Right.
Cactus did, and we did that blues. It was a very straight-ahead blues, so for him to do it is a natural. But I did that song also, just with the drums first, you know?
Yeah.
Difficult to play a blues with just the drums.
Yeah. In general, is it harder to play slower tempo stuff, you know, when you're especially when you're trying to do the bass track like that, when you're kind of playing along? Is it a little bit harder?
Yeah, I mean, when you just do... When you're doing the drums first, it is.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, if you do it with a band together, it's a little more difficult. Less is more. Doing it the way I did it was really.
Yeah.
Way less. There's nothing else there.
Yeah, that's
there's nothing else there. But when I gave it to the bass player who's become a mule for 15-20 years, so he played it. I tried to get the dynamics of the original, you know, in this track, and then he followed my dynamics. And then in the solo, he knew where, you know, by following my dynamics, he knew how Wong would probably play, you know. So it came out amazing. And he's the only guy that played and sang at the same time, Wong.
Yeah.
That's why the guitar and the vocal is so together at times. They really, you know, bouncing off each other. It's tremendous.
Yeah.
Everybody did such a tremendous job on it. And you know, if everybody sucked on the album, it wouldn't be good. You know?
Yeah.
But everybody really did a tremendous job. I mean, Dee Snider used to sing Evil with his band Widowmaker. And so I knew he'd do a great job of it. Because one of my students played with Widowmaker, and I heard it years ago. So he was the first guy that come to mind to sing that song.
Carmine, when you know the album came out, do you have a sense? I mean, number three on the charts is a remarkable accomplishment, and probably you know you look at the span of Cactus. You know, some of this material is pretty old at this point. So I mean, this certainly is bringing a new fan base around. Do you look at this and say, okay, we probably should get back on the road with this, you know, now that there's, you know, there, you
oh,
might...
We've been on the road. We have been on the road. We just finished two shows in the New York area, and earlier in June, we did three shows in the Florida area, Foghat. And we're doing more shows in August. And, you know, like every month from now on, pretty much except for July, we're doing shows. But I tell you why, when that hit number three, it blew my brains out because, you know, it was my idea to market it as a blues record because I was watching Foghat, number one on the blues charts. I was watching Robin Trower, number one on the blues charts. But when they hit the charts, they were like, they started out, I don't know, when I was, say, 20, then they went up to 15, then they went up to 7, you know, and I was expecting to do that. And you know, when I told the owner of the label whose idea this was, I said, let's market it as a blues album. It's, you know, it's blues rock. It's always been blues rock. And blues changes in all the songs.
Yeah.
You know? That's even McCarty, our original guitar player, said, "This ain't blues." I said, "It is blues. It's 1/4-5 changes. What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
You know? It's in every song. And, you know, blues came, the rock came from the blues anyway, but this is blues rock. So, you know, I didn't expect it to hit at number 3. I was like, wow, yeah, blown away.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I haven't been on the Billboard charts since 1989. And with me being this idea to go for the blues chart, you know, and he called it, and the owner called the Temple of Blues, and we changed the artwork, which we had that cover, like the Sgt. Pepper kind of cover.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it became a temple, we changed all the artwork behind it to all this temple stuff, which made it a concept, you know. And, you know, I was happy with the artwork, the packaging, the LP looks great, the CDs look great. There's an insert, you know, shows you all the lyrics like we always used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And to make it to number 3 the first week, you know, because I contacted Foghat's manager, this Roger Earl's wife, who I knew, and I knew Roger. And I said, "How'd you guys get to number 1? Who promoted?" So she said, "We used 2 guys." I said, "Well, let me have the names of these guys." One of them was a guy I used before, and another one was a new guy. You know, John Lappin is one I knew.
Yeah.
You know, and this other guy, Michael. So we had 2 of them working it, just like they did. You know, and with all this, you know, star power we had on it, it must have really worked.
Yeah.
So now, my next thing is, like, now we made it on the blues charts with Cactus. We got to do another Cactus album, maybe doing traditional blues, but done it our way today,
yeah,
and get a few guests on that. Maybe not as many, but considering we broke through the blues charts, and it's wow. You know?
Yeah,
I mean, I would love to get some sort of nomination of some sort of blues album cover, or, you know, the album itself, production or compilation or whatever.
Yeah,
anything. You know.
Yeah, I mean,
now that it went so high in the charts, we have a good chance.
Yeah, and in all honesty, the packaging is great, but to me, this is about the sound. You could have the greatest out. I've heard some crappy albums with great artwork. This is an amazing album.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, I agree.
And I think
I
was going to say that I think the thing that really helped is that, you know, you brought in a lot of friends to do this album that, kind of cross over a lot of demographics to help, you know, draw attention to music that, you know, if you had just done a remake of Cactus songs with, you know, a band, it may not have.
Well, that was the whole concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the whole concept, was influence. It was called, originally, it was called Influences and Friends.
Yeah.
You know, so when they came up with the Temple of Blues idea, after I said, let's market it as blues,
mm-hmm.
it's still Temple of Blues Influences and Friends.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as Billboard blues charts go, you know, it's a Cactus blues album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I agree with you.
Yeah.
But that was the idea of it.
Yeah.
That was the idea of it, to get everybody who were influenced from different areas of the business. And I think it worked.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, but it did work. I mean, if we did a blues album, I would get a few other people that play on it. I'm sure, like, Doug Pinnick would sing and play on it, and Ty Tabor and Billy Sheehan, and, you know, a few other guys.
Yeah.
It's because they love Cactus.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And
I'm sure
that may be the future of Cactus Records.
Yeah, I'm sure the line of people that would like to play with you on drums is long. Carmen,
I have a couple of guys that I didn't get, like Steve Morse and Michael Schenker owes me a couple, you know, so that's just 2 I could think of right now.
Yeah, I imagine if you let the word be known that you want to make another record and people hear this record, the line will form itself behind that. I did want to ask you, you will be doing a show here in the Pittsburgh area late August, the 24th at the Monongahela Aquatorium. Tonight's the night, a Rod Stewart tribute. How did you get involved with that?
Well, we're trying to fix the marketing of it, so it's called you know, the greatest raw tribute experience, you know, because it's me, the guy Rob, and me and the girl catcher that plays with Rod. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're advertising that. They should be, you know, because, you know, I'm going to draw in my own people and with the Rod show. But the way it happened was that last October, I went to see Rod Stewart, and I noticed that he did 8 songs out of the 12 were songs that I was involved in.
Sure.
Songs that I never got to play anymore. You know, like Young Turks and Sexy and Passion and Hot Legs and all that stuff. You know, I'm on those records. I'm featured on those records. But I never get to play them, you know? So I was going to put together my own Rod experience. I did it years ago. I did it with guys that played with Rod. Probably I did it in 2010 or 12. And I did okay with it. I went to China with it, Macau, and I did gigs in this country and just different theaters. But I ran out of somebody to book it. I couldn't find anyone to book it. This tribute thing wasn't going on yet. You know, so I was a little ahead of my time on that one. But I had guys who played with Rod. That was the difference. You know, but... So I said, I'm going to put another one together so I can play these songs. So instead of using guys from the band, because it used to cost me $5,000 just to do a rehearsal. I have to fly everybody in from all over the place. You know, so I said, let me get some local guys. I got some local guys that I thought would do it. It ended up not working out. The singer that I had, you know, was 10 years, 12 years older, and it didn't work out. So then, in the meanwhile, Catcher, the sax player who played with Rod 14 years, called me at one point and said, look, I was going to L.A., so we have lunch. So I said, what are you doing? She goes, I'm playing with this guy, Rob. He does a Rod show. I said, really? How is he? He goes, he's really, really good. But he needs some help. He's trying to get some work in Europe. You know anybody that could help him? I said, yeah, give me his number and I'll hook him up. So I hooked him up. It didn't work out, but we kept talking. When my thing fell apart, you know, me always thinking, throw it in the back of my head, I said, maybe we could work something out with this guy. So I said, where are you playing? He said, I'm playing just north of you by a couple of hours at the Villages, which is, you know, 55 and over. It's a swinging, crazy, you know, community, let's put it that way.
Right.
So, you know, I said, well, maybe I'll come and see you. So I went up and saw him. Me and a buddy of mine drove up there, and he got me a couple of rooms. And he said, well, why don't you come up and play a couple of songs? I said, yeah, a couple of songs turned into like 6 songs, right? And I was watching him do his thing, and I said, wow, this guy is really good. He really does Rod better than Rod does today, you know? And so I played with him. When they brought me on the stage, the audience freaked out. They loved it. And then after that show, he said, why don't we be partners? I said, okay. And, you know, and I noticed there was the whole business end of his thing was not as together as it should be. So, you know, I brought in my manager and my agent that I know is the biggest tribute agent. And now we're just starting to work on. So these are dates that we're starting to work on. We're trying to get, you know, get the advertising correct. So it has, we have a poster that has him on it, and then has me on it, and has Catcher from the Rod Band. You know, and we do it in 2 sections. We do an intermission. We do first with his regular band. And I also started changing the image because everybody's wearing black. I said, look, Rod's shows were colorful. I mean, we weren't everybody wearing black. We got balloons on the stage. We put together a video that goes behind us. It runs the whole length of the show. You know, we shoot off confetti. We have a good time. You know, it's a different kind of show now, you know, and so we're in the, right in the, this year we're starting to rebuild it as a different kind of show, and that's one of the gigs. So I think we're going to have my drums and maybe I think my gong, you know, in the video. Hopefully it's going to have a screen in the theater. Have you ever been to that theater?
Yeah, this is actually an outside venue right alongside the river. Oh. So I honestly don't know if they have a screen behind it, but I would be surprised if they don't. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, me too. It's the most places have it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it looks really cool. You know, looking at us, you see me with Rod, you see Catcher with Rod. You can see pictures of Rob, you know, singing, and then psychedelic stuff, and, you know, artsy things, and names of the songs flying around. You know, it's just entertaining. You know, part of the whole thing. So that's what we're doing, and we've got a show on the 6th of July, and 11th of July, and 19th of July. They're all spread out, so we're trying to get the agent now to. We got one show, just add another show, so it makes it financially worthwhile.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you blow all your money on flights.
Exactly.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Book a
string of them together so you can just do them and be done.
Yeah. And eventually, I hope to do a couple of weeks at a time. You know, I'll do like four or five shows in a week, and do that 2 or 3 weeks, and then take a month off.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can bring out the full show. You can bring out I have scrims to make it look like it's white, like the stage was white when I toured with Rob. We have these air dancers that come up, you know, the things you see at the car washes.
Right.
You know, when we start doing Do You Think I'm Sexy, they come up and shoot confetti off, and he's, you know, kicking out soccer balls. You know, it's fun, like a Rod show used to be.
Yeah, that you know? Sounds like
I mean, Rod shows are still fun, but it's a different vibe now.
Yeah,
you know,
certainly.
It's more of a Vegas thing, you know, because Rod, look, hey, I get it. Rod's older. I mean, I look the way I played in those days compared to now. I mean, my arms are flying up in the air. I had 2 rotator cuff surgeries.
Yeah.
And, I get a backache. You know, I'm older, you know.
Yeah.
So, same as Rod. He's older, so he's got these beautiful chicks running around. And they got a big video screens and a full band. And, you know, it's a good show. You hear all the hits, still singing them. And it's great, but the show we do is just more high energy. You know?
Yeah.
You know, we take a break in the middle. You know, we do like Some Guys Have All the Luck, Forever Young, Ooh La La, things like that in the first part of the show. We take an intermission, let everybody go out and buy merch, which I'm still trying to figure out the merch for this thing.
Sure.
You know, because I had regular rock and roll merch. It didn't work. You know, black shirts and tank tops with You're In My Heart on it. Didn't work, so now we're trying different merch, you know, like women's V-neck T-shirts and different color pastel colors with the names of songs and really nice artsy stuff that older women would like, you know.
Yeah.
And I've been testing it out on different women that are over 50, seems they would wear that. They're saying, yeah. And then for the guys, we have these Sex Police T-shirts, which we used to do with Rod, which was we said Sex Police raids. Somebody had a woman in their room. We put on our shirts and we go up the whole way, go Sex Police, we're the Sex Police. Like, exactly what it was, the Sex Police. You know, if you find somebody that had you, bang on the door and you'd ruin everything that was going on for the guy.
Yeah.
So it's a funny story. So I would tell that story, and we have Sex Police shirts. And one of the guys would wear the Sex Police shirts, and now I just got hats, Sex Police baseball hats, because a lot of the guys that come to the show are older, you know, they're balding a little bit, and they, everybody wears the baseball hat.
Yeah.
Know? So I was trying to figure this out.
Yeah. Plus
we got like drumsticks and some of my shirts and all that, but, you know, and Rob never did any of that. He just went around and did shows and, you know, and...
Yeah.
Now we're really trying to make it the best show that's out there, like those Queen shows that are out there. They're making lots of money.
Yeah.
Doing big crowds. That's what I want this thing to do.
Yeah, and it's a.
So we're building it.
A great template, the Queen shows, because there are quite a few, and I would recommend highly you bring some copies of the Cactus record for the merch table, for those who get a chance to hear.
Oh well, I will do that. I got these. You know, Karma and Fire and Fury T-shirts and drumsticks, and what else we got? We got a good amount of stuff. So.
Awesome.
And I got a girl to sell it to now this time, which is going to make it easier.
Yeah, much. Karma, I want to thank you again. The new album is available now. Can't recommend it enough. And you kind of whet our appetite for what's to come with Cactus. So I want to thank you, and we will see you near the end of August here in Monongahela. And want to thank you for your time, man.
Yeah.
The spectacular return of Bruce Springsteen and the legendary E Street Band. Live in Pittsburgh. The 2024 World Tour, PPG Paints Arena, August 15th and 18th. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. An unforgettable night with Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. For more, visit BruceSpringsteen.net.
A very special thanks to Carmine Appice and Chris Slade, two amazing drummers. Great to have a chance to talk to both of them. Great music available for both of them. Carmine's Cactus album is available now. The Chris Slade Timeline also available now. And you can catch Carmine at the Monongahela Aquatorium on the 24th, doing a Rod Stewart tribute show. So opportunity to see him live. Unfortunately, we may not get to see Chris's band, as we talked about in the interview, for some time, but keep our fingers crossed until then. We invite you to check out IronCityRocks.com. We'll have links to the album, links to the tickets for the show, and more information on these artists. And also, you can check out the other gazillion podcasts we've done. If you want to go back and listen to some of the previous interviews with Carmine or his brother Vinny, we have plenty of those to choose from in our history. Invite you to drop us an email at ironcityrocks.com. I'm sorry, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. If you have suggestions for things you'd like to hear about, our social media handles are all Iron City Rocks. We appreciate you following, listening, entering the contest, answering the questions of the day and things like that. I really deeply appreciate all the input we get from you. So thank you, and until next time, have a good day.